10 past 10 on the 9 to noon show. Second hour of the show for this Friday morning. I always say the Friday panel is the absolute fastest hour of the week when you get to do this show. And so it has proven once again. Thank you again to Breege, to Marion and to Kieran. A really enjoyable conversation there. Just a few of your comments. Caller says, Kieran Brogan sitting chatting about business. It's fine when you have your money made. Ordinary people are trying to make a living out of their business on a day-to-day basis. Another caller says, as Sinn Féin has now confirmed the findings of Michael McDougall last year that half the asylum seekers and refugees in Ireland have no bona fide case being here, will they support their deportation? How can Kieran Brogan say the government is helping small businesses? What planet is he on? I don't think he understands much on a day-to-day basis about running a business when he comes out with that. Minister Foley made a great move for children in dealing with the phone issue. She is courageous in doing what she's done. We should place our focus on the initiative rather than the 9 million. 9 million is very little when it comes to improving the health and well-being of children and young people. Another caller says, I've never heard more obsequious comments in a long time than those from that person regarding the horrendous scandals of those phone pouches. Is there a link with this sudden ban on phones in classrooms? What if the SPHE curriculum students won't be allowed phones in class in the likely event of videoing the SPHE content? And there was a very long discussion about that on the programme yesterday. Again, another caller backing Minister Norma Foley saying she's made a great move for children in dealing with the phone issue. She's courageous in doing what she's done. We should place our focus on the initiative rather than on the 9 million. And tell Councillor Brogan, we're a business who applied for an energy grant after COVID. We were denied because we paid cash and had all receipts to show. What government doesn't accept its own legal tender? Another caller says, I think Norma Foley should give money back to the teachers in schools that are taught through the medium of Irish. Teachers need extra incentives to teach Oscailge. It's extra work and they deserve to be paid. The 9 million would have been better spent on educational needs of the children and having them assessed for their special needs and getting them extra supports, says another caller. Talking about small business, I went to a group who are supposed to help small business. All they want is your idea. A lot of talking, no real financial help given. These groups are nothing more than talking shops. Another caller says, big thank you to Marion and Breege who are speaking our language. We need more speakers being given the airtime to voice our concerns. We're being decimated, our communities, our local businesses. Would the 9 million not solve the scoliosis scandal? That would be more beneficial to these children. Another caller saying, just ban phones from schools and use the 9 million for something useful. Another caller saying, means testing threshold for disability allowance needs to be raised and mean test the person with the disability, not their partner. Another caller says, government would need to have a look at the threshold for the medical card. Raising the minimum wage will push a lot of families over the threshold and they will lose their medical card as a result. Another caller asking, when is the housing minister coming to Donegal? The 9 million could be used for storage for MICA homes. Another caller saying, not a word about immigration into our country. Over 400,000 for modular homes for Ukrainians. None for Irish homeless. No homes for the defective block families. Plenty of money for bike sheds, security huts and £1 billion hospital. That would make politicians look good when it's all finished. And there are more comments here that we will get to in a few moments. We have Seamus Gunn joining us on Zoom this morning. Seamus will take some of your legal questions and Seamus will also discuss one or two of the issues of the day. Going over now to Zoom. Seamus, good morning.
Morning, Don.
Seamus, I want to start with, and we had a big long discussion on the budget in the previous hour, but I want to stay with budgetary provisions for just a moment because there were changes made to inheritance tax and from, you know, given the level of discussion we have on this lot about wills and inheritance, that's going to be important to a lot of people, I suspect, who make a point of listening to this lot.
Sure. Yeah, Don, I think it's fairly relevant at the moment. It has come up before, and in fact, maybe a couple of shows back, we referenced it in that there was some certainly lobbying and suggestions that the inheritance level, which was set at 335,000 for a lineal descendant, that's a son or a daughter, was too low given the property values. And it would be a big imposition on any person inheriting from a mum or a dad that if they're inheriting the house and it's over that type of value, then they're into a very, very, very heavy penal nearly tax of 33%, what comes at over and above the threshold. So I think there was good justification for looking for that, but I would be slightly disappointed at the level it has been set at. It has been increased to 400,000. Now, if you take into consideration that house prices nationally, now it's reported that house prices at the level they're at currently, 2024, are ahead of what they were pre the crash in 2008, say. So at that point in 2007, the inheritance threshold was set at 496 odd thousand at that time. And now we're above the level of that for house values, and we're seeing a threshold of 400. Interestingly, in 2008, the year everything did come tumbling down, the threshold was increased again to 521. So I would have thought that a level of around the 500 would have been maybe more appropriate. It mightn't kick in lots of parts of rural Ireland. That's absolutely accepted. But then if you get towards the urban areas and get to the cities, the cost of a two or three bedroom semi in the Dublin outside areas is going to be in the region of 400,000 plus, I believe. So it's not doing an awful lot for the person who's looking at it with a view to inheriting in the future. They're also hitting, interestingly, so maybe more, again, geared towards the bigger urban areas, but they have introduced a stamp duty rate, a heavier stamp duty rate, which it was 1% up to $1 million. That stays as it is, but they've now put in another tier, as it were, that a house that's purchased at between 1 million and 1.5, that's now 2%. But, and this is the big one, after that duty, and we're referencing maybe the bigger towns, urban cities, etc., at over 1.5 million, the stamp duty now has increased 6% on the instrument, which is quite... That's quite a heavy toll on any purchaser whenever you're going into buying and mortgaging, etc. So that's a big leap forward. It hasn't really got an awful lot of attention yet in the media, as it were, with the consumers. But I think in the weeks to come, when the reality sets in and bites, that rate above 1.5 million will be easily exceeded, and certainly in many parts of the country. And you're into a 6% stamp duty and a 2% from the 1 to 1.5 million. So those are definitely issues that will arise. But particularly, I think the inheritance, I don't believe they've gone far enough. I think the other thresholds have yet to be fixed, but they're probably going to be something like pro rata. At the moment, a nephew, niece, brother or sister is 32.5 or so, and then a stranger is half of that again at 16.25. So they're going to get a little bit of a hike up, but I think it's certainly fallen short, I think, of what's required.
Another interesting issue for your profession is the release recently of a comprehensive report on personal injuries. And I'm sure you and your colleagues in the legal profession have been taking very close heed to that and its findings.
Yeah, well, this is really just hot up the press. I think I just heard it this morning. So, it'll be digested over the coming days, no doubt. But it seems it's interesting. It's referencing the Injuries Resolution Board and the report for their 2023 year, and how things have changed from going back to 2019 in relation to the statistics. The number of cases, the volume has gone up, but the actual awards have come down, and they're well back. So they are, and the level of awards have come down as well. So comparing them to 2019, in broad stroke, the median type of award is now coming in from the Injuries Board at around about 12,000. Now they're breaking it down into the different aspects. There's motor, which is down 41%. On 2020 levels. So your average claim there arising out of a motor accident coming in at around 10.5, 10.6, which is well back, 41%. Public liability is down 40%, and they're coming in on average at around 20-odd thousand. And then employers' liability is also down at 29%. The point, though, that everybody will be asking is that how are these going to be reflected in premiums? Because profits, insurance companies' profits are increasing and have been doing so. And they passing this on to you, the consumer, and I and everybody else, to the retailers out there, the small businesses who really do need a massive reduction in the likes of public liability insurance, which it does not seem to be kicking in. Like any of the reported profits over the last few years show that under the public liability, employers' liability, though the profits that insurance companies are garnishing under those are very, very well up. So there seems to be claims coming down costs coming down. I think they were saying there's a differential maybe of 75 million on legal costs being saved. There's 48% of assessments being accepted by those people who are awarded money by the Injuries Board. And there's 105 odd million of a differential of money being paid out. So my question is, well, I would like, where is it going? Will it get to the consumer? I think the relevant minister has supported the report and saying that the changes are working. Remember, new guidelines were brought in over 3 years ago, which have actually brought down the value, obviously, of personal injury claims. And minor claims are being settled. A lot of them are settled before they're even getting to the Injuries Board level. So there's big savings being made, and I believe they should be passed on.
I'm sure IBEC and other representative bodies will be keeping a very close eye on that particular one. Let's go to some of the questions, Seamus, if you don't mind, that have been coming in to the station here. I want to start with one, and it's an interesting one. Caller says, is a neighbour allowed to put a fence on a boundary wall? They bored holes in the wall and put a fence in it. Now, I presume what they're saying is the fence was erected on top of the wall and hasn't compromised the structure of the wall.
Similar questions have come up before, Donald, and good. There's an old saying, good fences make good neighbours. And in some way, in very practical ways, that there's a good deal of truth in that. The point, I think, that arises, and just to be careful of whenever people are looking at this, is to just establish the correct boundary in the first instance. Now, to do that, you could have a digital survey carried out then the boundary would be established and you would be advised on it professionally. And then working off that, you are quite entitled to set up your boundary wall or boundary fence. The question they're asking then is, can a fence go on top of a wall? That is unusual. Does it intrude in any way on the neighbour? Does it cause a nuisance? Or does it infringe on their enjoyment of their dwelling house? Those are questions that you certainly could be asking. But would they gain anything for you? I would have some doubts. I think the key to it is the location of it.
I mean, if you had a situation where it was, and I'm spitballing here, I don't obviously know the case. If it were a semi-detached house, for instance, if the window of a back room were beside the wall and the house was built facing a certain direction, could it be, for instance, if that fence went on top of the wall, it might block the sun in the afternoon? If it were a solid fence, then we don't know, is it a solid fence or a slatted fence or whatever. So, I mean, is there some form of legal recourse that you can say, look, okay, this new fence is now actually impacting on the light that's coming into my sitting room, and I'm not getting the natural light that I used to get as a result of it? Can a case be made there?
Yes, you could certainly make that argument. There'd be a very hotly contested as whether you're entitled to a view in law at all. But if it impinges on the light and your actual enjoyment of your home and maybe the room and changes the configuration or the features of that, certainly you could put up an argument, maybe get a survey done on it and proceed down maybe a litigious route. However, if you want to go down that route, you have to be prepared to spend quite a considerable sum of money. You also have to remember in practical terms that such actions will polarise the parties. And if it's a semi-D or whatever, and living in close proximity and seeing each other maybe on a daily basis, it certainly doesn't make for good neighbours or good relations going forward. So you have to factor all these points in and see the level of the intrusion or the impingement on the light that it has before you would jump in and start going into law on such an issue. Each case is different. Circumstances are different. There's not one of them the same. Yeah. So in the first instance, you're going to have to evaluate it and be in a position to show maybe what the way it was previously as to now, and then see what the differential is, and then make an informed decision as to whether or not you want to spend money in such an activity and what the consequences of it are maybe going forward.
Maybe in a case like this, the most important thing to do is have a cup of coffee and a chat at the kitchen table.
Well, I mean, it goes a long way, Donal, and I certainly would not be advising people against that. I think it could eliminate a situation arising later on that could not only cost a lot of money, but could ruin the relationships going forward. And that has a big value as well.
Caller says, I won £800 in the lottery in Strabane. Because we live in the Republic, I'm told I can't claim it. I need a UK address. I was told I would have to go to Wales to collect it. This would potentially cost more than the winnings. Where can I go from here?
Well, I'm not familiar with the lotteries in Strabane, I have to say. I think it's quite novel that if you have an address here, you can collect. I haven't seen the small print in such on such tickets or what the terms and conditions are. It'd be very, very interesting for the caller to actually investigate that, to see what the actual, there are specific terms and conditions with regard to every lottery and as to whether that is one or not. That's the first point that I would suggest. And if there is not, well, then it could very well be worth challenging. It would be challenged likely in Northern Ireland, so they would have to retain the services of people in there in the legal profession. It's €800. I get their point about if it's only an address they need, maybe they can get that accommodated in some way. But it is certainly an unusual one. I would believe that if they're lucky enough to have been drawn out of the hat, that they would be entitled to the proceeds of it. But check out the special and the conditions, the actual on the actual ticket itself, to see if that is in fact one of them recorded. If it's not, they've a very stateable argument, I would think.
Caller says, I was involved in a motor accident in 2021. I was injured and I was awarded €23,750 from the insurance company. I accepted this. The solicitor that was dealing with the case said I owed him €2,500 in cash for his work. Long story short, I asked for paperwork as I never received any. After a few weeks, I got paperwork stating that he actually got €25,000 and on the paperwork was €1,250 for solicitor's fees. He told me the agreement was I would pay him and the €1,250 was for PHAB fees. I asked for a receipt for the €2,500 and was told, no, this is the normal practice.
Well, I mean, it's we've been on this show for many years and we've never commented on fees in individual cases. Now, the relationship is a private relationship between the solicitor and the client, and in those circumstances, the matter should be raised with the solicitor and then sorted out with them as to whatever their terms and conditions are, whatever the conditions are with regard to the retainer. So it's not appropriate for me to comment on specific cases in which costs have been charged and an individual, if they've discharged them and if they have an issue with it, they can certainly raise that with the solicitor involved. But I won't be certainly commenting on a specific case such as that. I don't think it would be appropriate.
If you video someone at an accident scene or another incident, are you collecting their personal data and thereby bound by GDPR and possible liable to prosecution for any possible breaches of the GDPR regulations by publishing data without consent?
Well, by publishing data without consent, you could come up against the GDPR, the commissioner, and be the subject of a referral there too. With regard to the actual recording of it, they would have to tread warily, I would think. But you do hear regularly in relation to accidents on the roads, and they're ever increasing, that and the Gardaí put this out regularly, that anybody with dash cam, etc., which is a recording as well, to come forward. So they do have a particular purpose. Whether or not they are in breach of the GDPR, I think that they should, if they have a concern about that, they should contact the relevant the commission and make that inquiry. On the face of it, if it is to assist with regard to an accident or a situation on the road, and that would help with maybe some type of detection or some type of driving, I mean, we have to have it balanced, and it has to be proportionate. I think that's what might be important.
It's as though that there's an implicit question here: is a person's image regarded as data under GDPR? Because what they're effectively saying is, if I have a recording of someone's image taken on a video camera, does that in itself constitute data?
Well, if you're asking my view on it, I would consider that it probably does actually constitute data as such. It's interesting, though, that with the recording mechanisms that are now coming on stream and may very well be right across the board available to the Gardaí in time, that for taking footage as to how they're going to be considered as far as the GDPR. And that probably has yet to be teased out. But in my view, I would think it could be considered data. Yeah.
Interesting. In that case, I apologise to the 3,000 people whose data I breached because I took a shot of the crowd at a gig in Galway recently to put on social media. So I've breached about 3,000 people's data,
yeah,
it would
appear. Well, I mean, that's extremely extremely common. And we have to apply a certain degree of common sense, Donald, which unfortunately sometimes isn't really that common.
Going back to, and this sort of links up actually with one of the earlier questions. Caller says, can I cut my neighbour's hedge, which impacts on my property, and its lack of care has also left my property looking unsightly?
That has, again, featured at a time in the past. The key to that question, or the key to the point that they're making there, is that it is the neighbour's hedge on the neighbour's property. So I would be saying to them to tread very warily with regard to interfering with property if they intend to do so. That is not their own. I think you might be back to where we mentioned earlier on about the discussion and having a full chat about, well, the boundary and the maintenance of it, because that's the one thing about hedges that can give rise to trouble and often do, is that the growth aspect of it, and it mightn't be to the neighbour's liking. So, you know, you have to. There has to be some form of give and take in this situation. But you cannot just go in and start dealing with another person's property in such a manner. Now, there is provision under legislation where you could go and get a works order from the district court. But again, we'd be going down to in order to have it cut back and to actually impose upon your neighbour to do so. And that's a route you could consider. You could consider taking, but again, it just is the fallout from all of that later on, and as time would go by, as to how it would play out, and whether or not the relationship would then deteriorate to such a degree that it might become intolerable. That's really what you're guarding against. So, yes, a discussion. When semi-detached and people who are living beside each other, there has to be give and take on a daily basis. On practical terms, they're even probably sharing roof space that covers two dwellings, and you know, and that type of situation. So all of that it has to be looked at. And even when people are, if they are buying properties, or whatever, these are things that they should ultimately consider. And they can give rise to difficulties. But I do have a caveat, and I do always warn against it. That I'm not in favour of getting involved in litigation for litigation's sake, and for money's been spent on that by people with a view to at some point it's having to be settled anyway. Because ultimately these type of cases and actions do have to, and there will be some give and some take in it. That will be the net result. Now, that can be a net result now, today, as I say, falling out with the neighbours, etc. Or it can be the net result after two or three or more years of long litigation and all that comes with it and the cost that comes with it. So those are aspects that I think that you should just keep and bear in mind.
Caller asks, if someone were to get €250,000 from the sale of their parents' estate, would their pension be affected?
Well, I believe that pensions are, and if it's a state pension, that they are means tested. And as such, if they are means tested, then if they have a lump sum of that of $250,000 and it's in the bank, then the implication from that is that would in fact gain some interest and some income, and the Department of Social Protection apply a certain amount to that. So that would have a knock-on effect on the pension and would, in my view, likely reduce it. Now, where you have to be careful is if that is not declared, if that is $250,000 is not declared, and you are still claiming getting the full pension, after your death, whenever a statement of affairs is submitted, then it would become clear that sum was got and that it was not actually reckonable for the purpose of the pension, and that there could have been income on it. And at that point, the department legally can claim back any overpayment of pension from the time in which you had that or received that. So that's something that you have to bear in mind and just to be mindful of it.
Would that also hold true for the pension that's a contributory pension based on your stamps? Presumably on that one you would just pay tax on any residual.
Yes, I think on that one you're talking about if it's that's a contributory pension. I'm talking about, we're referencing there the state pension in that case. And in this particular case, that pension would be considered income. But then any income that you would get off your 250, if you had that 250, yep. And then that was put away and was gaining something, then that would be another aspect of income that would be reckonable for tax. But the point I'm making is in relation to the state pension.
What are the procedures to get the deeds of my house? I built it. I've been the only owner. Now, I suppose the key thing we haven't been told here is whether there's a mortgage on the property at the moment.
Yeah. Well, when the mortgage is cleared off, what happens then is that the financial institution writes to the customer or the borrower and they advise them of that. And they would usually then file what's called an e-discharge with the property registration authority in order to have the charge removed. And the deeds would be forwarded to the customer because the bank would obviously have no longer any interest in them and there would no longer be any reason for them to hold on to them. And then that would be a full clear title. The caller seems to be, though, making the point that they're concerned about the actual deeds of the house. And I think I might be wrong, but the implication is that they consider that there might be deeds for bricks and mortar, which there are not. Their title could very well be registered in the land registry, and if they have a map, they could go into the PRA site, it's now Tolch Éireann, and check that out. And once the property site is registered in their name, then there's a folio relevant to it, and that folio is actually the deed for the plot and anything that's on it, which in this instance would include their dwelling house. So they could be reassured on that. If they think that there's an actual deed for the bricks and mortar, yeah, it's the actual ground on which it's situated that's relevant.
And as long as there is a mortgage on the property, that deed is going to be held by the financial institution.
The financial institution will have what's called a lien on it, and they'll have a legal mortgage on it, and they will have their title documents usually held with it, and then they will return them to the caller whenever it's redeemed.
Seamus Gunn, as always, thank you very much indeed for your contribution to the programme this morning. Hope people have found answers there, and I'm sure they have. And as ever, Seamus, thank you, and we look forward to your return in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks a lot, Donald.
Seamus, thank you. It's been a pleasure. We're going to line one because we're joined by Gary McClarty, who's a director of MCL Insurance. Now, the company is one of those that installs black boxes in some cars, and they've been getting some very interesting stats out of the black boxes and the data that they've brought forth. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Next week, Gary, it's Road Safety Week, so you've been looking at the black boxes in cars that you are covering, and some of the data coming from them is very interesting.
Well, yes, it is. We operate the itsforwomen.ie and getsetgo.ie brands in the Republic of Ireland. And from 2013, we have collected 675 million kilometres of driving data. And that's based on people's type of road they drive on, time of day they drive, their acceleration, de-acceleration, speeding, etc. And we've put that into an algorithm and we've overwritten it with the number of claims and accidents that those people would have had. And yes, I must say, we've had some very interesting results. And during that time, the accident frequency has fallen from about 13% to 4.25%. So it's been very successful in preventing accidents.
And in terms of the day on which you're likely to have an incident on the road, today's the day to be careful.
Well, yes, Friday does seem to be one of the worst days because of, I think, with the rush hour and maybe the weekend, there's more traffic on the roads on Friday. And usually when there's more traffic on the roads, well, I suppose there's a bit of a contradiction there. And sometimes when there's a lot of traffic on the roads, yes, there's an awful lot of would you say, accidents in terms of small accidents. But what we're also seeing then is much more serious accidents on the country roads where there's not so much traffic. And then what happens there is it tends to be greater speed and lack of awareness in terms of corners and braking, and that causes accidents as well. So, of course, like the fastest roads being motorways, they tend to be the best designed roads and the straightest roads, and they have the lowest accident frequency.
Now, obviously, when we speak about accidents, we are speaking about an incident involving a car. It could be a fatal tragedy. It could be what would have been called in the past a fender bender. And with that in mind, 4 to 5 p.m. is the most risky time in terms of having an incident in your car.
Yes, that's right. Again, I think that comes back to rush hour, the amount of cars on the vehicle, on the road. That's when most of the accidents are actually happening. Yes, absolutely. Some telematics policies have put curfews on drivers, so not to drive at midnight and certain times of the day. But we haven't seen that in our data. So any of the policies that we would offer through our brands, It's For Women and Get Set Go, we would not put a curfew on drivers. With the box is not there really to penalise people. It's there to try and give them a nudge and push them in the right direction to try and give them some input in how they drive and hopefully to improve their driving. And as a result, reduce the number of accidents on the road. It's not going to prevent all accidents, but as I say, you know, we've had a 67% reduction in accidents since we started, and so that's been a very successful process to bring it down to that level.
This is something you'd like to see other companies and other motorists take on board.
Yeah, I mean, we as a business have been calling this, or been saying that this should be a mandatory. Looking at the number of deaths that there's been on the Irish roads this year, which is terrible. We think that this is something which should be considered for new and inexperienced drivers for maybe a 2-year period, that it should be a mandatory fitment until they get the experience on the roads, and then after that, then it can be disabled.
Finally, it's always dangerous to try and extrapolate data and make it mean things that possibly it doesn't mean. But looking at your black boxes operated by your customers in Donegal, any interesting sort of localised data coming from them?
Yeah, well, the good news is that whilst the frequency today of accidents is down to about 4.25%, as I was saying, the overall average from when we started has been sitting around about 6%. And Donegal drivers are around about 5.25%. So they're slightly safer than the average in terms of the accident frequency per 100 drivers.
Well, that's a nice note to finish on. Gary McLarty, Director of MCL Insurance. Is there anywhere online, Gary, that people can go and look at these figures to have a look at the data and absorb it for themselves?
The figures might be on, if they're not, they will be on our blog on one of our websites. So it'll be either itsforwomen.ie or getsetgo.ie. The figures there will be on the blog somewhere on one of our websites.
Right. Well, Gary, thank you very much indeed for that. That's Gary McLarty. He's a director of MCL Insurance, and the data from those black boxes operated by the company being published today, making some interesting reading. Gary, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure, Donald. Bye-bye.
Okay. That's Gary. Let's take a few more of your comments before we go to our next caller. And obviously the discussion earlier today on the budget and its aftermath has really been, exciting people's interests. Nothing in the budget for the self-employed, says a caller, can't get any benefit if one is off sick. Can Councillor Brogan justify the 15% property tax? Now, that was a Donegal County Council internal discussion rather than, and I know Councillor Brogan, unless I'm very much mistaken, you can actually listen to Councillor Brogan's view on that property tax rate in Donegal on our website, highlandradio.com. Just go into the news, actually scroll back a couple of days, and I know that Michaela, who was at that particular meeting, did interview Councillor Brogan about that. €9 million for pouches for school phones and young people mental health. What about the mental health of children in MICA homes? They're throwing money to Northern Ireland, A5, but won't strengthen or widen the road to Lifford and put a bridge across the Swilly. Ask Brogan to answer that one. Now, what Kieran Brogan would respond, and did to a certain extent, is he will say that the overall project is the 10T, which has got three elements, and those elements do include the Letterkenny, the Manor Cunningham to Lifford link, linking onto the A5, the Bonagie link, which is that bridge over the Swilly. So it's all part of the same process. So when we talk about the 10T, we're talking about doing both. Now, the question, as we said, is when does it happen? Tell Kieran we're only now getting what the rest of the country has got for the past 20 years. We have nothing, and for the roadworks at Tully Wrap, A load of, the government is not fit for purpose, so says a caller. Now, Ireland has a massive drug problem. We are finding them all the time. They're washed up on beaches, etc. We need to get this under control before society is ruined. Another caller says, I get €237 a week. I should be getting 280 as I have PRSI stamps. I'm told I'm not entitled to them as they have no record of my contributions from 1981 to 1986. And there certainly should be a record of that somewhere, I would have thought. Caller says, the government just threw in something stupid like that phone rubbish to deflect attention from the real issues with the budget. Caller says, is Councillor Brogan canvassing for Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael or both in the next election? Councillor Kieran Brogan will canvass for Fianna Fáil. Fine Gael candidates will canvass for Fine Gael. And they will both canvass as separate and disparate political parties seeking to maximise the vote of their own party. And then it seems inevitably they will have to get together and have a discussion after that happens. Let's follow the €9 million fall holders, says a caller. Let's see who gets the contract. If any TD is found to be a shareholder, questions should be asked. Please announce there is a coffee morning for Alzheimer's at Dunamore Church Hall today in Liscooley from 10 o'clock to 1. So if you're in the vicinity of Liscooley, there is a coffee morning for Alzheimer's in the church hall there at Dunamore, and it's going on until 1 o'clock. Another caller says, I concur 100% with Aldbridge Curran said on the show today, the Smarties will soon disappear, then the crying will have to be ignored when austerity measures are brought back. Another comment, caller says, regarding hospital name badges, I've yet to go into any shop, pub, cafe, restaurant or outlet and see staff with full names on the badges, first name only. That goes back to a discussion earlier in the week on name badges for staff at Letterkenny University Hospital. A lot happening, obviously, in the Middle East and particularly the escalation of Israeli activity on the Lebanese-Israeli border and also shelling of Beirut as well. And just a caller saying, please spare a thought and or prayer for our Donegal lads serving in South Lebanon, close to the border with Israel. And certainly our thoughts are with them. The UN have stressed up to now that all their personnel, including all the Irish personnel, they're all safe at the moment. And hopefully it stays that way. Have no issue with name badges before. Have a bit of cop on. Patients and families like to know who they're dealing with. That's another comment following on from that discussion that took place last week, as we said, on the hospital name badges. In relation to the 15% increase being kept on the local property tax. Now, just to remind you, if you weren't listening to news earlier this week, what Donegal County Council has effectively chosen to do is the council for the past 5 years has operated a local property tax rate of 15% above the baseline. Councils, there is a baseline, and councils can vary that baseline to either 15% above or 15% below. It came before the council this week, and there were three options the council had. They could remain at 15% above the baseline, which keeps the rate the same as it has been up to now. They could bring the rate back to the baseline, which would have been effectively a 15% reduction on what's the cost at the moment, or they could have taken it down a further 15% to 15% below the baseline, which would have been 30% down on the figure that's been charged over the course of the past 5 years. The council chose to leave the rate as it is, which is 15% above the baseline. So the level of property tax you're paying will not increase year on year because it's been paid at 15% above the baseline for the past 5 years. Caller says, and the one of the main arguments used by council officials was that this was for match funding. Now, O'Connor says, how can the householder who has another shock gone into their car, bad roads, another burst, no water supply, see their pockets being used for a project in Schlieveleague or Malinhead? The Donegal County Council put the proposal up, 17 votes saw it through. Who's getting the expenses and the photographs? Is it the person in New Mills with no water or the person in Brenelec with potholes? A 2.4 billion hospital to a €2 million printer. Cost management as quickly as possible. A fish rots from the head, so says a caller.